about tomorrow. There are yeah, you guys should drive a car this time. Yep. You'll never go if you don't go. Well, if you try to count my fingers, go walk around.
Springfield Talk 104.1. Hey, everybody. My name is Nick Reed. Welcome to this totally awesome show. Thanks for coming along. I appreciate it. You can send us messages through the American Transmissions Talk and Text Line 447-KSGF. And that's also the call-in number. It's very convenient. The best way to do it is just download the app, and then you can easily just tap a button to send a message to that text line. It has become, of course, the preferred way for most people to communicate, as opposed to calling and waiting on hold. And sometimes it's busy because we're talking with others. So just text if you'd like to. And you can always, Monday through Thursday, as we stream on Facebook, 1041 Nick Reed there, you can communicate in that arena as well. And you can always email me, nick.reed@ksgf.com. So many different ways. So accessible. And, of course, on Fridays, we're here at Scramblers. That, thanks to Affordable Towing, 6 a to 9 a every Friday. We're going to chat with Tom Martz coming up here in just a couple of moments. Also, a look at the weather. We've got some watches and warnings, and, you know, it's all heat-related. Jason Ryman now with the latest news update.
Springfield police have arrested a convicted felon on gun charges in connection with last weekend's deadly shooting on South Scenic. 19-year-old Jaden Falls died, and another man was shot. 40-year-old D'Angelo Hurd is only charged with unlawful possession of a firearm. Springfield police say that's because surveillance video shows Hurd pointing his gun, but police say that he did not fire a shot because his gun jammed. Missouri's back-to-school sales tax holiday starts today and runs through Sunday. You can save money on things like clothing, school supplies, and computers. A top Democratic state lawmaker is asking Illinois and Kansas to cover emergency abortions for Missouri Medicaid patients. House Minority Leader Crystal Quaid from Springfield asking the Democratic governors of Kansas and Illinois to get Medicaid waivers for out-of-state abortion seekers. And a 36-year-old man from Missouri is facing federal charges for taking a gun to the January 6th Capitol riot. Jared Barger from Centralia was arrested in Osage Beach. He told authorities he realized he lost his gun there after he tried to help a woman up who had fallen. I'm Jason Rima, Springfield's Talk 104.1.
I related. The First Alert forecast sponsored by St. Clair of the Ozarks Home Improvements. We got a heat advisory for today. Just advising you of the heat. Heat advisory. For counties west of Springfield, heat advisory tomorrow for pretty much everyone who's listening. Sunny, hot, slight chance of afternoon showers, high of 94 today, heat index of 101, clear tonight, 74. Tomorrow, sunny, hot, slight chance of showers, high of 96, heat index of 103, and Sunday, sunny, hot, high of 95.
Sarah Myers.
Thank you.
Here she is, everybody.
Well, Beadles Property Maintenance. First things first, Beadles is spelled B-E-A-D-L-E-S.
We like to spell things on this show.
Yes, we do. Well, you know, I've had people ask me, how do you spell Beadles before? Because there's a bazillion ways that you can spell it.
Are they being sarcastic when they ask you that?
No.
Because you always spell. Are they like, oh, by the way, how do you spell it again?
No, well, that's why I started spelling it. Yeah, there you
go.
Fun fact of the day. Well, I want to talk to people who are specifically property managers or in the real estate industry today. So if you work in the real estate industry and you are looking for a great, reputable company to help you in that inspection process, maybe you're in the process of selling a home for one of your clients and you need somebody to help you with some of those items that need to be fixed during that inspection phase, Beadles Property Maintenance, they have a really great tool to help you with all of those inspection processes that need to be done. Now, if you are a property manager and you have a rental that you need to get ready before you have new tenants move in, Beadles Property Maintenance can also help you with that. And they have a long laundry list of things that they can help you do. So if those are the services that you work in, Beatles Property Maintenance. They can definitely help you out. Now, of course, if you are a homeowner and you do find yourself needing a home repair, whether it be big or small, maybe you have a crawl space problem, maybe you have some water restoration that needs to be fixed, maybe some mold, whatever the case is, Beatles Property Maintenance can help you out as well. Now, you can find all of their contact information housed at KSGF.com under the Sarah's Endorsements tab.
Next time he's on, I want you to ask him, just my own curiosity, what is the most unusual job that they've done?
Oh, yeah, that's a good question.
You know, because yeah. In my mind, like I said, I'm making a list of things. I've got probably six different things I want them to do. And I think, you know, I bet there's been something like, huh, well, that's a new one. And I'd be curious what that is.
I will ask him next week
when
he's on.
Perfect. Sounds good. Tom Arts is here.
You know, I heard a statistic the other day that the average person in their lifetime will swallow a spider while they're sleeping.
I've heard, at one point I heard that it was seven, that you ate seven spiders like while you were asleep. And I remember telling my mom that, and she was horrified. But we would later learn that that statistic wasn't true. But that one maybe, I could see how that happens. Spiders crawling around
but
your
house
at night.
But you know, for positive fact, the way they came up with this average is that there's some people who don't do any,
yeah,
and there's some people who do a lot, depending on where it is that you're at.
Absolutely,
so,
yeah. It could be a little spider.
Could be terrifying.
I know. I
wake up
and
see a tarantula
open.
Come out of your mouth. Or
you got to brush your teeth. What the hell?
My molars are getting big.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, let's do traffic. Go ahead and take that care of that, and we'll continue. Tom Arntz, this morning, I'm Nick Reed.
You're listening to Nick Reed in the Morning on Springfield's Talk 104.1.
Wow. Hey, everybody, welcome to the show. My name is Nick Reed. We are broadcasting live from Scramblers. Love doing the show out on location. Tom Arntz is with us.
Hey, in 1914, on today's date, the German army launches its assault on the city of Liege.
Classic Germany.
In Belgium, violating the latter country's neutrality and beginning the first battle of World War I.
Classic Germany.
That's right.
Do you know we have, isn't it our second highest country location outside the U.S. of podcasts is Germany? Yep. We have quite a bit.
Well, that would stand to reason. Yeah. I mean, you do have Nazi affiliations.
And yeah, that's what it is. I'm sure. I thought military base, but you know what? You might be right. So, hey to all of you guys and gals in Germany listening. I appreciate it. Thank you much. Send us a line. Send us a message.
So, was the third largest audience the...
it was what country
in Ukraine?
Was it? No.
With the neo-Nazi militia?
Yeah. What? Was it Brazil? It was Ireland was in there. There were a couple. There were a number of different countries for download podcasts.
Cool. Did you know in 1976 the NBA merges with the ABA?
Nope.
The ABA.
Is that the American Basketball Association?
That would be the National Basketball Association merges with the American Basketball Association. For those of my age, I remember Dr. J.
I know the name.
Dr. J played in the ABA.
Oh, okay.
And then when they merged, of course, he brought over his manliness to the NBA. Now, speaking of Germany.
Yes.
In 1944, Sarah, knock it off.
She's in rare form this week.
Polish insurgents liberate a German forced labor camp in Warsaw, freeing 348 Jewish prisoners who join in a general uprising against the German occupiers of the city as the Red Army advanced on Warsaw in July. In 1858, the first transatlantic telegraph cable is completed. In 1981, Ronald Reagan starts to fire the first of the 11,359 air traffic controllers because they decided to strike in violation of his order, and then he told them to return to work. The executive action, regarded as extreme by many, significantly slowed air travel for months, unlike COVID
right.
of today. In 2002, divers recover the USS Monitor turret. The rusty iron gun turret of the USS Monitor broke from the water and into the daylight for the first time in 140 years. The ironclad warship was raised from the floor of the Atlantic, where it had rested since it went down in a storm off of Cape Hatteras. But most importantly, and I am calling this one fake, today's date, movie actress Marilyn Monroe is found dead in her home in Los Angeles. I'm not calling her death fake. Right. I'm calling this next part fake, and I'll explain why. She was discovered lying nude on her bed, face down with a telephone in one hand, empty bottles of pills prescribed to treat her depression were littered around the room. After a brief investigation, Los Angeles police concluded that her death was caused by a self-administered overdose of sedative drugs and that the mode of death is probable suicide. Okay, she died in 1962.
The first Jeffrey Epstein.
Correct. Because in the 1930s, California was the first state to have a prescription drug monitoring program.
So we know that it couldn't have been an overdose.
quote of the day. When ambition ends, happiness begins. By Thomas Merton. And I found this other one.
Says someone who has no ambition.
Probably so. The funny quote of the day is always make the audience suffer as much as possible. Alfred Hitchcock.
Accomplished on this program here. More with Tom Arts as we continue the Friday Road Show, sponsored by Affordable Towing. Live from Scramblers, I'm Nick Reed.
Hear about it.
I know I'm beating a dead horse here.
Talk about it.
The hypocrisy and the double standard is kind of unreal.
On Springfield's Talk 104.1. You're listening to Nick Reed in the Morning on Springfield's Talk 104.1.
Yeah, that's right, you do. Springfield's Talk 104.1. I'm Nick Reed, just chatting with Darren Chappell, who, of course, close race, won his primary, and we'll be headed to Jeff City. Talked about going to pick up. He has a few campaign signs left, and I was thinking, especially in the primary in Missouri, August. It's so hot. And the day after, it was Wednesday, and I remember driving home, and I, you know, would see some signs. Everyone's been pretty good about getting all of those up, but, you know, it does take a little bit of time. And I thought, man, that sucks. Out in the heat, particularly some of those big ones, and pulling up those, they're not giant stakes, whatever they're called, but how much worse it is if you lost to have to do that. Ugh.
Well, I don't mean for this to sound the way it's going to sound, but based on my visuals, Darren had 20 times the signs as Tom Barr did. So for Tom Barr to go out and pick up his signs, from what I saw, it's not going to take a lot for him to do it, which is why I was amazed that that race was actually as close as it was.
It was closer than I thought. Now, that being said, I'm not overly familiar with the voting trends of that particular district, which I guess is a new one anyhow. I was surprised that it was that close. I was thinking the other day, and I'm just going to have to ask someone, like Eric Burleson, for example, thinking about the amount of signs, if you're running for 7th Congressional District, obviously, where does he keep those things?
I could answer that, but the individual who is the keeper of the signs.
Oh, okay. Because I thought you can't. It's not like if you're even a state. If you have a lot of signs, it's not something. If you a state rep race, which is obviously much smaller in terms of scope than a congressional race, still there's more than you. The average person could keep in their garage. And so I thought, well, you've got a lot of them if you run in 7th or if you're a U.S. Senate, obviously.
Well, see, if you're smart, the first time you run, you make your sign so germane.
Right, yeah.
That should you decide to run for something else, you can just get a little graphic and put over what it is that you're running for. I noticed that when Mike Moon ran the first time for U.S. Congress, then he ran for state rep, and then he ran for state senator. Mm-hmm. The part where it was that he was running for office were all in the same location.
Mm-hmm.
So it looks like you could just go over top of it with a little graphic instead of having to buy new signs.
I wonder,
now with him, he can keep his out in his barn.
I wonder, yeah. I wonder if there's if there'd be a market for that. Signs that had were interchangeable. You could slide in and out, whatever the race is. You have somebody like, oh, I know I'm doing this as a career. I'm going to be in this for long haul. I'm thinking long term. And so swap out state, and then you just slide it out and slide in your new one.
Well, it'd be kind of hard to do with the Coroplast signs because of the way they're designed and what they're made out of. But I would imagine if you made them out of plywood, that, yeah, you could just have little interchangeable pieces. That, I mean, there is a gentleman up in St. Louis County, Paul Berry, who seems to run for everything under the sun.
Yeah.
And I noticed he ran again, and this time he got walloped.
That's all.
He was fourth out of four people.
And that's all that I know about him, is that he does run all this. Isn't it Paul Berry the second? Or
the third.
The third, okay, yeah. I'm familiar with Paul Berry the third.
But in speaking of electoral, the thought process, I want to give my buddy Abby Covington out in Joplin a huge kudos, because she and her group out there helped to successfully defeat what was proclaimed to be a police and firefighter protection tax. However, it was actually a public safety tax, of which public safety was not defined in the ballot language. So public safety, in reality, could have been a public crosswalk.
Sure.
It could have been playground equipment. It could have been a thousand different things, but everybody we're going to give this to police and fire. Well, if you're going to give it to police and fire, then specifically state in that tax that it is going, mandated to go to police and fire. It's time that actually people wake up and start reading what it is that they're voting on, and to make sure that what it is that they think they're voting on. I mean, she's posted a screenshot of some of the mean and hatefulness of people who are basically threatening her simply because she helped along with people that she knows to defeat this tax, because after all, she hates police and fire.
Well, and this is the part of a situation like that that is ironic. You would so if you have a scenario, and I'm not overly familiar with that particular situation, but of course I trust your analysis of it.
It was called Safer Act.
Yeah. So you have something that's present where people are led to believe this is going to specifically go to, let's say, law enforcement or whatever, and then, but in reality, because of the language, it doesn't have to go towards that. You would think the more pro-police you are, the more you would support stopping something like that and demanding, no. If we're going to have something that's for law enforcement, we want it specific that has to go for it. So really, she's taking the action, as I understand the situation, as really being in more defense of law enforcement getting funding, because this is something that could go elsewhere, potentially. This situation came up. It was yet another John Stewart, Ted Cruz situation, and it was years ago, and not the most recent, but it had to do with 9/11 funding and something with firefighters, or, you know, I don't remember the exact situation, but the way it was written, the money didn't actually have to go there. And there was all this other massive money, and so Ted Cruz voted against it because all of the money that was allocated did not have to go to what it was that it was supposed to go to. And, of course, it works out perfectly for the politically motivated, because people like John Stewart and others, they get out there and rail on him. He voted against people that tried to save lives on 9/11, when in fact he was voting against something that would have allowed money to get diverted away from what people thought it was going to.
Yeah, because people don't look at what it is that it's supposed to be for. If you're going to promote that something is for police and fire, then the least you could do is make it so that it is specific to, and it requires the elected and the city manager to make sure that that money goes towards police and fire. She just aptly pointed out, and I had a concrete with her last night, so we were kind of talking about this while I was down in Joplin. She was pointing out how it is on her social media presence of, well, it could be crosswalks, it could be playground equipment, it could be for anything under the sun. It doesn't specifically spell out that it goes to police and fire. Well, police and fire ought to look at that and go, you know, you're right. It doesn't realistically say that it goes straight to us.
Right, exactly.
So maybe we shouldn't support this, but we've got this, and I know you said it on several occasions, we got this cult-like mentality that, well, if they say it's going to go to police and fire, then by golly, it'll go to police and fire. No, it won't, because as soon as you turn your back, it's going elsewhere.
Right.
And no one will be there to figure out what happened to it. Kind of like how Springfield, for the longest time, managed its capital improvements projects. Well, let's start one here, start one here, start one here. And then the next time it comes up for a renewal, well, these projects won't be done yet. But we'll say we're going to do this, 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 and this. So we'll start on those to make it look like we're doing something. Meanwhile, the three or four that they started prior still haven't been finished. And it keeps going on and on and on and on that way.
One of the arguments for the vagueness of something like, let's say, all right, this tax and it's going to go for public safety, is that, well, it gives us leeway. We don't know. We don't want to, you know, what happens if we say it has to be specifically for these things, but then this situation comes up where law enforcement needs it, and then we have tied ourselves down to where we can't use it for that. And I can understand the instinct for that, but what you have to also recognize is with the vagueness of it, it's all open for interpretation, just like you said and she noted. And this reminds me of another community I was in where there was a big battle that the city was voting on whether or not to add a tourism tax, which isn't anything we're unfamiliar with here, to local bed and breakfast and hotels. And it was basically the money would be used for anything that helps tourism. Well, anything that you do, you could say, well, that's going to help tourism because it makes the city better. Anything that makes the city, quote, better, you could argue would increase tourism.
Bike paths, sidewalks,
anything
all kinds
at
of
all.
Things. Yeah.
Anything at all. I mean, you could claim we need to double the mayor's salary because that will attract more successful people to run for mayor, and we'll have a higher quality of people from which to choose. And if we have that, we have a better mayor, which means we'll have a better town, which is going to increase the likelihood that people will want to come visit here. You can just, when you leave it open like that, it can be used for absolutely anything. It essentially becomes a slush fund.
Well, see, what I found funny about that piece of legislation, and now it begs the question on some of the other ones that I really haven't paid attention to, it specifically spells out in the state constitution that if you're doing a property tax thing, it has to be passed by two-thirds.
Mm.
Well, their bill said a simple majority. And then when you go back and you look at the permission granted to them for this tax at the state legislative body sets the simple majority application when they're in violation of the state constitution, which says two-thirds.
Yeah.
So in order for something like that to pass, you got to follow the Constitution. Last I checked, and I know I'm odd in this
matter,
the state constitution supersedes state law unless it specifically says in that section that this is subject to change by law, and that's not in that section anywhere.
Final thought for people on these particular sorts of issues where there's a push for a tax increase and there's a level of vagueness there, and when others will point out, but they could use it for this, this, and this, sometimes people take offense because they say, I know the people who are in charge. They're genuine people. I trust their judgment. What about when they're gone? What about that next person that you have no idea who that is? You don't know that they are going to have the same judgment that you trust. And so always think, this is a little test I gave myself some time ago, whenever there was a discussion aside from the constitutional component, but talking about giving the power, particularly, let's say, to the executive. And I think the Patriot Act is a great example of this. A lot of people support it because they trusted George Bush. Well, what about when he's not there? What about the next person and the next person? Whatever power you feel comfortable giving an elected official, think about the politician that you just can't stand and that you worry about having that same power. Would you still support it? If the answer is no, then maybe you shouldn't support it.
Well, the Patriot Act brought forth the MIAC report and the right-wing domestic terrorist extremism report, which has now gotten broader and broader broader as time goes by.
And that's a perfect example. People who, you know, that... that has gotten to where, in this day and age, is used by an administration to investigate parents at school board meetings as potential terrorists. And so it's like, well, that's not what was intended to do. Well, that exactly. But that's what it has become. And that's why that power should not be trusted with a person when that person in that position is going to change over time. More with Tom Martz coming up. I'm Nick Reed.
You're listening to Nick Reed in the Morning on Springfield's Talk 104.1.
Well, let's see. First alert forecast. Let me pull up my weather here. Sponsored by Navant. Employee benefits that work. There's a heat advisory today for counties west of Springfield. Heat advisory tomorrow for most of the Ozarks. Hot today. There is a slight chance of an afternoon shower or storm. High of 94. Heat index of 101. 74 for low tonight. Hot tomorrow. High of 96. Heat index of 103. Sunday, sunny. High of 95. And we've got Mr. Tom Martz with us.
Hey, in looking at the elections, I found it quite odd in some manners. Now, granted, Eric Schmidt won simply because of, I think, the endorsements that he got and his notoriety of his last 2 years as Attorney General.
Let me ask this. Do you think he still would have won with smaller margin without endorsements?
I think the groups like Americans for Prosperity and certain Republican
Association
Now,
you're
counting
those
groups.
Endorsements as
yes.
well in yours. Okay, got it. I was thinking Ted Cruz, but yeah, okay, so got it.
Because if you look at Schmidt's voting record, and this is nothing against him as a person, but if you look at his voting record, he's no different than Dave Schatz. He's no different than Lincoln Huff. His voting record, while he was in the Senate, he was the huge supporter behind China Hub in Kansas City. He got appointed to the Attorney General position by who? Parsons. Are you going to tell me that Parsons is a conservative?
The China stuff, this is what bothered me. This was the part of all that bothered me with Schmidt. Because I felt as if he never addressed it. He just ignored it.
He did ignore it.
What I would have liked, felt more comfortable with, if he was like, listen, I did, and I'm telling you, I just at that time, China in the way that it is today was not on my radar. It, frankly, it wasn't for a lot of people. It was for some, I admit that. Yeah, if that situation were to arise today, absolutely would not. And that may sound like an excuse. I'm just trying to be honest with you. But, yeah, I did it because I thought at the time it was right. I was wrong. I just, you know, that I would have been like, okay, at least you've addressed it. But when you don't, it's like, all right, do you still not think that, you know, that I didn't like.
But it's easier not to address it. It's to ignore it.
Yeah, because, yep. Because if you address it, then it keeps it alive.
And for all these different organizations who say they're conservative or they're for limited government to endorse a guy that has, up until 2 years ago, no stance ever that would lead one to believe that he is limited government, he didn't come around until the Biden administration took control. Then all of a sudden it's lawsuits out the wazoo. All of a sudden it's, well, I'm going to sue the schools. I'm going to sue these counties that are mandating these masks. Where was he under the Bush administration when they were doing the same identical thing?
And I tell you something else, and I don't know if it's the nature of things. I don't know. Maybe it's me. But it became very noticeable to me that, as opposed to several years ago, where everyone that was running for the U.S. Senate, the primary, daily, can we come on the show? I even saw, like, the Schmidt's campaign at one point, because of a number of other things that were going on, and, of course, he's going on Beck, he's going to Dana Lash, don't even get a return. I mean, no interest at all. Billy Long and Mark McCloskey were the two that constantly, any time they were in the area, or said, they're like, can we, you know, we'd like to come on and talk, in that particular race. Before she announced, Vicki Hartzler's people asked if she could come on to talk about the border or something, and I said no, because, you know, it wasn't anything that was relevant at the time, and frankly, I knew what was going on. They were trying to lay the groundwork for some, you know, because she was going to announce and so forth, but yeah, those were the only two. And even when we would reach out, and some of these people, Josh Hawley's office, I can't tell you how many times we've called. He's not running, but called, and they're always real. Yeah, oh, yeah, we'll book it. Radio silence after. We just gave up. And it's just, it's interesting to me. And I don't know what, if that says something about me, if that says something about them. Part of me feels like I'm just so tired of the crap anymore that I'll, you know, I'm just like, come on. And, it, you know, I'm a little less accommodating to the political, you know, letting them get away with saying the standard stuff. It's just so boring at this point. And if that's what it is, I don't know. But it really, and some of the local races too, you know, had no trouble. Alex Bryant, you know, reaching out, wanting to come on. He did Mike Moon, of course, Eric Burleson as well. But it's very noticeable how many Republicans just radio silence, wouldn't even return calls.
Well, see, I can understand why Mike and Eric both decided to run for Congress. Mm-hmm. Personally, I'm okay with Eric winning, mm-hmm, Burleson, because I know his mindset will, mm-hmm, play better, mm-hmm, in D.C. Mm-hmm. I prefer Mike to stay in state because he's got the, yeah, stronger states' rights application than I believe Eric does. And I have this dream at some point in time that Mike is our governor. And veto session becomes something that people would enjoy watching because his veto pen would run out of ink. And then special session, the veto session.
He just would end up getting a
along stamp,
one of those stamps with his signature. He would be the first rubber stamp governor, but it wasn't rubber stamping the bill. It was rubber stamping the vetoes.
So that would be something for somebody like me. I would enjoy watching, yeah, the veto sessions and how it is that our legislative body under a supermajority are basically going to tell a constitutional governor, mm-hmm, we don't care what the Constitution, yeah, says. We're going to do what it is that we want to do because, right, that's pretty much what they do anyway. Because on a rare occasion, Parsons opens up the Constitution and says,
when it benefits,
well, hey, my golly, that part does, yeah, exist in here.
Well, and that's what they do. It's when it benefits them.
The Democrat side of the U.S. Senate is the one that I found odd, though, because in my travels throughout the state, mm-hmm, I did not see one sign ever for any Democrat. Mm-hmm. The person who won the race is at the second from the bottom. She's nowhere near the top. She is the second person listed from the bottom of the ballot, and she took 43% of the vote.
Well, let's get a traffic update. We'll talk about that coming up with Tom Arntz as we continue our Friday Road Show. I'm Nick Reed.
You're listening to Nick Reed in the Morning on Springfield's Talk 104.1.
Welcome to the show. My name's Nick Reed, live from Scrambler's Restaurant, Republic Road in National, Tom Marks.
You know, they normally say that being at the top of the ballot, yeah, will probably give you about 1% of the votes.
Okay.
So on the Republican side, Patrick A. Lewis was the first name the ballot.
For U.S. Senate.
For U.S. Senate. He ended up with 0.92%. So he was close to...
So he would have had negative 0.1%.
Possibly. Yeah.
If he weren't on the top.
On the Democrat side, you've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. You've got 11 people on the ballot. So number one is the Lewis Rowland ended up with 1.423% of the votes. The gentleman that you spoke to on the phone,
Lucas Kuntz,
he's halfway down the ballot. He ended up with 141,000 close. And 38%. Trudy Bush, which may have been because it actually, she is listed on the ballot as,
yeah,
Trudy Bush Valentine. So as you scroll down through there, you go, Bush, is that Budweiser? Is that Anheuser-Busch? I'll vote for her.
Right.
Well, being that she's number 9 or number 10, whichever I said was, she ended up with 159,000 or 43% of the vote. So I think there's a lot to do with name recognition.
Mm-hmm.
I think the application of where it is that you were on the ballot has very little to do anymore with.
I agree.
With anything, because I don't think Eric Burleson was at the top.
No,
of the ballot.
Wasson was. Wasson
yeah,
was.
Yeah, that's right. Wasson was. And in
Burleson was second, I believe.
U.S. Representative District 2, Ann Wagner was at the top.
Yeah, the incumbent.
And as an incumbent, she got 67% of the votes. The one that I was watching and I felt it was really interesting was District 4. That's the one with Bratton, Alford, and Bruce. And it was funny watching that race as it kept loading up. It was like a NASCAR race because
mm-hmm.
one would be in the lead, and then all of a sudden they drop back to third, and somebody else would assume second, and then all of a sudden second would be first, and first would be second, and then all of a sudden third moves up to first. So watching those vote totals come in, about halfway through the night, Alford had, unless he knew where the vote totals were coming in at, he would have never had a clue that he was going to win that race based on where it is that he's strong and where he's weak. But that was the only race that I thought was quite interesting in watching it's not statewide, but it's more of a state race than it is a local race, to watch those three jockey back and forth on how one was first, one was second, one was third, then third was first, and then second was third, and it just kept going that way up until about three-quarters of the night through.
The Democrat primary, as you noted, and Lucas Kuntz, it was his campaign, reached out and said, can he come on the show? And yeah, absolutely. I did see some television ads that were running, and Bush Valentine was being portrayed as, you know, oh, she's a nurse and devoted her life to helping people. And I did see ads against him that essentially I consider myself what would normally be the average voter as I see those ads, because I really wasn't following that race too closely. But the ad I saw essentially said he's a Republican. He used to be for or against gay marriage. He used to be, you know, and
so
basically
did Barack Obama.
Well, so,
and
yeah.
Clinton.
Oh, I know. But the thing that struck me is the way that he ran his own campaign. It was as if he thought it was the general election. This is a guy running in a primary asking for Democrats to support him. And, I mean, his ads, he's talking about being in the Marine, you know, the military. And I think he even had a gun in one of them, if I remember right. And I'm thinking, you are trying to the active base of the Democrat Party, which is becoming more and more left every day. And what are you doing? You're doing this wrong. The campaign that he ran in the primary, if he had won, that would have been a general election campaign. You know, try to get the blue collar and the independent voters. But I was really surprised that he took that tactic. And so it didn't surprise me. It didn't work.
Well, maybe he was running against the Great Seal instead of Trudy Bush Valentine.
Or he thought, hey, that worked for... the problem was he's in the wrong party for that to work. Tom Arndt's with us. More in moments. Traffic update now. I'm Nick Reed.
You're listening to Nick Reed in the Morning on Springfield's Talk 104.1.
Live from Scramblers, Tom Arndt.
Hey, tomorrow I'm filling in for Kyle Wyatt.
Oh, okay, great.
And we're going to be discussing with James Clary. So we're both going to be doing the show.
Okay.
We're going to be discussing the DeSantis decision. One of the topics.
To fire the...
To basically lay him off or whatever.
Yeah.
Because I find
relieve him of his duties.
Yeah, because at some point in time, you've got to realize that a government functions best when it's functioning.
Yeah.
And the fact that, you know, we the people control government. Well, how do you get rid of those people?
Mm-hmm.
Once you hire them... Who is the person who suspends them or fires them or does whatever? And in this case, there is something within the Florida Constitution
which
allows DeSantis to do this.
Yeah, and this is for people that don't know. This is because of there's an Eric Greitens ad running on TV right now. That's okay.
He will work for us.
Yeah, a little behind there. Anyway, sorry, I got distracted there. There is a DA or prosecutor down there who openly said he would not prosecute cases involving their pro-life laws. that he just wasn't going to do it. And so, and I think there were other instances cited as well, but, you know, and so, yeah, the Constitution allows the governor to relieve him of his duties.
But you're going to have a hard time, though, relieving somebody of their duty if you're relieving them of their duty because of words. Simply saying that I'm not going to do this is not grounds.
Well, I guess, well, maybe it is. But here's also, if you want to call it a remedy, the state legislature, I think it's the Senate side, has the ability to replace.
Yes.
Replace a prosecutor that the governor relieves. So there's a check and balance there. It may be 2/3 that's needed. But so if it is an egregious abuse of power, at least believed by that elected body, they have the ability to put him back in that position. But all of this is allowed by law, and it is checkable. And so the idea that this is something that is, a dictatorship, no, it's not at all. I mean, this, again, is the problem that the left has. Instead of arguing the merits of their position, they just name call. They say, oh, it's a dictator. He's a dictator. All right, well, let's say he is. But let's talk about whether he has the right to do this legally, constitutionally, and in Florida he does. I mean, it's just the way it is.
Yeah, you got to read.
Just because you don't like it doesn't mean he's a dictator.
You got to read what the Constitution says and what it means. And, oh, by the way, I've got to give Dick Cheney credit. He did actually state that we are a republic.
Yes, yes. I noticed that, too. Yep, I know. I was like, well, at least he got that part right. he certainly did. The way I look at it is, and I've always believed this when it comes to, you have these attorney generals even in states. They're like, well, we're not going to enforce this or that. That's not up to you. You ran saying, hire me for this job, I will do it. You did not say, well, unless I disagree with the law. How would we feel if police officers acted that way? If you had a police officer who had a mouthy wife, and so he just let it be known, listen, I know it's my job and all, but domestic abuse calls, I'm not going to arrest any guy who beats and knocks, I'm just not going to do it. Would we say, well, okay, I guess that's your right? No, we wouldn't do that.
Well, in that case, they swear an oath to abide by the Constitution. So in a case where domestic violence has occurred, there is an assault, there is somebody had their rights violated. I have a hard time signing the ticket for speeding, because whose rights did I violate?
Tom Arts, thank you, and this, that'll be tomorrow. In for Kyle Wyatt along with James Clary. I'm Nick Reed. News in 60 seconds.